Okay, we're picking up with Bob Carr. The line got dropped, and Bob's back, and he wants to make a point. Then I had a question. Go ahead, Bob.
Well, the point is that these experiences that one has under the influence of mind-altering substances, regardless of what they are, they do purge a lot of the shit, the crap that is there inside of us, and expose all that, and do create this mystical experience that exists in our cultures. And the point is that, okay, it has a certain status, shall we say, but it's not it. It's something different, and even in the history, or even in the so-called teachings in Indian philosophy, yoga, they talk about the mind states, the higher states, the kinds of realization that take place, and the yogi has to put these aside and go on, that there's something beyond that. Now, fundamentally, I accept that these states may be devastating and mind-altering in so many ways, and do push one into these kinds of consciousness, but they are temporary, and they don't do what these various so-called sages have described what happened to them in their experience of being liberated or free or being enlightened. I hate to use that word because it's, you know, everybody wants to be enlightened. There is something that these states are limited. That's what I want to say. Because they are part of the collective experience that has been handed down through the millions of years of existence. We'll say millions, yeah. Even before human beings were human beings, these kind of states existed, and different forms of life were experiencing them. Everything is experiencing this background of information. That's how the intelligence operates and how it develops and grows. It's all part of the process of what living is, what life is. So, I don't know, you want to...
Yeah, let me comment. When the yogi teachers say, don't be distracted by the excitements of the mind, the strange experiences, you, though, would even question the yogi who claims there's something past that, past the distractions.
Yeah. Right? I'm putting the same question to him. How do I know... what you're saying is, you know. Otherwise, how do I know is the question we have.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what the question is, really. How do I know? And is there such a state of knowing that, you know? Is there such a thing
like
as being
certain?
Listen to this.
You know? Yeah? Yeah, did you say searching?
Certain.
Yeah. Yeah. McLuhan said, objects, someone asked McLuhan, will there ever be silence? And he said, objects are unobservable. Only relationships among objects are observable. And so one can never know by themselves. You only know through communication with another human or another animal or something. The knowing is a relationship, right? Okay. And so there's no certain object that you arrive at in isolation that you can claim is the end point of experience.
In Yuji's case, he said this: the question simply went out of his system, just didn't exist anymore. So that question had no meaning, and it just isn't there.
Well, how do I
know?
I
know. How do I know? I know. How do I know I'm enlightened? How do I know? You know, just isn't there. So.
Okay, I could say the same thing that I live that way, but when someone speaks to me, I create a relative knowing in relation to them.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
It's almost
speaks
like
to you. Go
you
ahead.
Pretend you know what they mean. You can handle what they meant, and you relate to it. Now, I could say, how do I know I even heard you? You know, that would interrupt social discourse.
Right.
I mean, that's why, you know, my friend Garrett Dean would say, he'd look at, you know, a simple farmer or anybody. They might not be advanced in any way in the cultural, educated, sophisticated standards, but he would say, their simpleness, their sitting there not knowing anything was very profound because they were being honest. They were they were approximating the fact that nobody knows anything, you know. Now, they may not be exciting to have at a party because they can't talk or they just aren't flexible, can't move. So people serve different forms of communication needs. That seems to be the decorum of life, if you recognize that.
You know, otherwise we just end up a bump on a log, you know.
Right. And most of us are bumps on the log, you know, if left to ourselves.
Yeah. Well, that's the state of affairs. If we think we know something, we don't know anything. If I feel I don't know anything at all, that's something.
Yeah, you know. You know you don't know anything, is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Yeah. If I know that I don't know anything at all, then that is something, you know, say. Well, what I mean is, okay, I'll put it another way. A man who talks a lot doesn't know anything. A man who doesn't know anything, what he talks about means something.
Okay, well, isn't that like when you say you know that you don't know? That's sort of like Descartes' I think, therefore I am. Because you can think that thought, you exist.
Yeah.
If knowledge, if knowingness is the foundation of existence. It's interesting, Descartes, he's criticized by the New Agers for dualism, but actually he may have got to the crux of the matter, to the point it could be communicated ineffectively, but communicated. And so he said, I think, therefore I am. To me, that's the same thing as your thought, that I know I don't know. I think the thought that I can't think any sustained thinking. That I know.
Yeah.
That I think.
Yeah. It's very difficult to talk about that presumed state where thought does not exist. We can't think about it. We have no means at our disposal to think about it, because thinking is already dead. It's already knowledge. It's already something that's in the past. And also that the thoughts that I think are not really my thoughts, but they're the thoughts that belong to this collective residue. And that structure of thought is only interested in surviving, to continue, to go on and on and on and on and on. It does not want to come to an end. The thought does not want to come to an end. It wants to continue. And it's using me as a means to continue by thinking. Got it?
I got it. Now, I was going to mention this before we got disconnected. Maybe a bit of it got on tape. What do you think of the world today? with electronic communications that allow this communication matrix that we can pick, tune into whenever we want to, that is moving, you know, rapidly, like the super speed you said the state of being beyond the mind is. We're getting pretty close to that in the media 24/7. But what do you think that we've extended this thought process now as a life of its own? This thought archive.
Yeah, we're doomed. Doomed. Doomed, damned.
So, Robert, I don't think we're doomed. Why do you say we're doomed?
Because the structure of hello?
Yeah, still here.
Oh, the structure of thought, you know, is destructive. It has created the division that human beings experience. It has created all the problem, the mess that we live in. It's thought cannot solve any problem. It is the problem, thought, thinking about it. So everything that we have in the world is a result of this thinking process, this thought. Science, religion, philosophy, literature, everything is a product of thought. And thought, by its very nature, is destructive.
Okay, I agree, but it does not mean that everybody gets wiped out. Humans will always be here.
What about the beautiful princess? What about
the beautiful princess?
The princess. Yeah, we're concerned about ourselves. You know, I don't want to go. I don't want to end. Nobody wants to die. I want to live forever, even though it's getting boring.
speak for yourself, Robert. Speak for yourself.
Okay, that's it.
Anyway, well, okay, yeah. Here's something.
Look, Bob. We hope and we believe that somehow human beings are going to survive, and we're going to. But did the dinosaurs survive? No, they went. Did the other forms of life? They're gone. So why not humans too? Why are we so important in the scheme of things? We're nothing. Take a look at the galaxies, you know. God, looking at a photograph by the Hubble Space on my computer the other day, and it was just a little portion of the Milky Way, our own galaxy, and it was so many billion light years across. Jesus, you know. It's mind-boggling.
How tiny we are. How tiny
nothing.
We are, is what you're saying.
Nothing. We're absolutely meaningless. Just so.
Okay, but look, in the scheme of things, the machine.
Okay.
Wait a minute. Let me say this: the machines will carry on consciousness. Some of us will make the evolution into the machine consciousness, and they will carry on. Then they'll get wiped out, but then they'll move into something else. If we did wipe ourselves out, what'd you say about machines? What did you say about machines?
Okay. Oh, it's all right. They'll wipe themselves out too.
Yeah. They'll wipe themselves out. But if we talk about
they'll design and make new machines that will make them obsolete, and the new machines will take over and repeatedly go on creating new machines, and they'll go on forever and ever. Like how the computer in 2001, it's programmed to destroy the mission.
Yeah, now, if humanity disappeared, is that, we don't know whether we survive death personally, do we? Or do you think you survive death, or you maintain agnostic, you don't know?
I don't know.
Right, so you remain, so within the I don't know, yes, it might be a concern that humanity disappeared. But if you believe you survived death, then you don't worry about humanity disappearing. But There's no, if you don't agree that we survive death, and I feel that we do, I'm not saying that we do, but if I said that, then there's just an endless argument, or we agree to disagree, and that's that. But you might, if you don't believe we survive death, you would be concerned that humanity was wiped out. Maybe. I don't know even if you're concerned about that. Are you concerned?
Yeah. Sure.
Are you concerned?
My connection with humankind, I'm part of the human species, and the species doesn't want to go. It wants to stay, you know, wants to keep multiplying. You know how many people are in China and India? Right here in Mumbai, there's 20 million, over 20 million people. The area can't support life anymore. It's becoming, you know, it's frightening. There's no space out here. There's no garbage dump except in the street. You know, it's a mess. You know?
We're getting the report from Scott from Mumbai. It is over here, folks. Mumbai, 20 million people, nowhere to put their...
I've often thought this is the future. Mumbai is the future of the world. It's a preview of what's going to happen. You can see it in New York, San Francisco, Los Angeles. You know, you can see it's headed that way. What's it going to do when these cities reach monstrous, you know, population levels? What's happening in Mexico City? You know, isn't Mexico City the largest city in the world?
I think so. But are you saying that Mumbai, right outside your place, there's garbage in the streets?
Yeah. Across the street, there are plastic bags, and the dogs come and eat up all the edibles real quick. That's one good thing for the dogs. I'm on their side.
Yeah.
So, and, you know, it's biodegradable. It's hot here. It's a tropical country. Huh? But, yeah, it's a mess. Just a mess.
But you remain there.
Yeah.
Because you are addicted to India.
That's a good reason. I have to find out why I'm here, you know. I have some work to do here.
Oh, you have a purpose, a little bit of meaning sneaking in there.
I take my orders from above.
See, you fall back into the universal archive of thought.
Just a joke.
I don't know why I'm here.
Yeah. I'm here because I got a ticket. Ticket said Mumbai, and I took it.
Right, to write your book. You are there because 8 years ago you were given a ticket to write a book, right?
Yeah.
The book kept you there.
Yeah, the book got me here. And anyway, sure, we hope somehow human beings are going to work it out, get it together, to how to solve their basic problems like population and health and existence, just day-to-day living. But I don't see the chances are really good, you know. In small countries where the population is small, it's basically together, you know. Sweden, Denmark, Norway, you know. But even the Thailand is pretty organized, pretty clear, pretty clean. And Vietnam is headed that way, getting better and better. But Burma's run by a junta, by a bunch of crooks, you know, that are ripping off all the money from the people.
Is it messy there?
Not as messy, because the population isn't as big.
Right. And, you know, India...
out of control.
Beg your pardon?
India's out of control. It's just out of control.
Right, but in the Western media, they present India and China as the future extensions of the military-industrial complex. And yet, it's like the hope of the future. People are getting becoming middle classes, but you're telling us, no, it's a disaster there.
No. It's a disaster,
It's better to go to Bahrain or Singapore or Nova Scotia or something.
Singapore is horrible. It's a fascist.
Oh, is that right?
Regime there too. Of course. It's like the government's like a dictatorship there.
But is it clean?
Clean, spotless.
It is spotless.
You can have your lunch on the sidewalk there.
Okay, back to we were talking. The way you're thinking now about the futility of the population explosion, did you think that way in 59-60? Was that in your consciousness at that point? 50 years
somewhat,
ago?
Somewhat, yeah. I didn't have any sense that human beings were going to get it together in 40 or 50 years, you know.
Right, let me say this. You imagine, if you can remember, what you thought in 1960, where you'd be by 1980, 1990, if you thought you would live. You never thought you'd be where you were today. If someone showed you 40 years ago your living situation now, you'd be shocked, right?
No. No, when I was in Hyderabad in 1966, I was sitting on a rooftop of the house I was staying at that this lady was so kind enough to offer me a shelter. Oh, Jay Rani Lalita Devi was her name. And I was sitting up there, and I off in the distance there was a mullah enchanting reciting the Quran, calling the worshippers to worship, And I heard that sound, and it's familiar to me. It sounded so familiar. And I said, I wonder if I'll be here towards in the latter part of my life, if I'll live in India. I wonder, something about this land, some connection I have, this feeling, what it is, I don't know. But I really thought, I wonder if I'll be here. And here I am. So,
you had an intuition. Yes. Intuition. You had an intuition that you'd be there in 40 years.
I guess so, yeah.
And where was that? I didn't get the name of the place.
Hyderabad. It's
Hyderabad.
Yeah. Now it's overpopulated. It's just, it was quite a charming place when I visited in 1966. Now it's overpopulated. Traffic is a mess. Yeah.
Okay, now, when you talked to Captain or Al Hubbard, did he describe his vision of influencing people? Was he messianic? I think you did imply he seemed messianic compared to what you would do with LSD. Was he messianic?
No, not terribly. No. But he had this drive to turn other people on, but do it with style. Some sense of style. Not the way Leary did it.
When Leary showed up, what did you think of Tim Leary's public image as you perceived it? Did you disagree with it like Dave Worster?
I wasn't impressed.
Like Dave Worster, he wasn't impressed. But you guys, were unique. You had been through this LSD. That was the incredible thing. You'd been through it already.
Yeah, I wasn't impressed by him, and when he was, posing as a religious figure,
Yeah. Even that would... See, you go to India and see Krishnamurti in Switzerland in 66. By that time Leary is known, you probably were pessimistic about the counterculture by the time you go to Europe in 66, and partly because you saw what had happened to it, where it was becoming with people like Leary. Was that a factor in having no problem leaving the States?
No, I left the States because I wanted to see Europe, and I wanted to visit Krishnamurti and see him in India. That was the reason I left. Just even now, you mean? Or
no, no, back then. Back then, you.
I wanted to see Europe, and as I say, Alice Taylor left me some money, and Connie, both some money. So we dropped out, you know. Time to move on. Time to shift.
Yeah, and there were a lot of people who went to Europe, and the jet agents started to come in.
Yeah, it was fashionable. Yeah. It was happening, yeah.
Yeah.
The hippie thing was just starting, you know.
Right. Now, did you say you wanted to drop out? Did you think you'd come back to the States?
Yeah, I couldn't. I had fantasies. Maybe I'll stay in Greece. You know, I like Greece. Or Morocco, you know. But no, I didn't. Yeah. No, I decided to come back.
But you probably thought you would come back.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
When you left, I had
a return ticket. So.
Yeah, it wasn't. Yeah, so you knew you would come back eventually. It might be years, but you would come back, and you weren't disillusioned with where America was at that point.
Hello.
Yeah, you weren't disillusioned with how America was at that point.
becoming more obvious. The Vietnam War, that was a horrible thing, you know.
Yeah. Okay, Scott and I got an email from a friend who is, I think, listening to the Bob Carr, the first excerpt of Bob Carr, and she was saying, she was familiar with Krishnamurti, she was saying, why would a person, if they read Krishnamurti, think that they would go need to talk to him, since his message was, don't bother me, I'm not going to help you. Do your own thing. She was saying that you didn't get the message of the books that you read, which was, you know, stay away, in a sense. So that contradiction about you going to Krishnamurti where he told you that he couldn't help you, what do you make of that?
Which Krishnamurti are we talking about?
Jiddu Krishnamurti.
Look. You and I and everybody else are going to continually search for some answer, someone, you know. We can't free ourselves from that. You know? That search is part of our nature, part of our background. It's part of our thought structure. So if you go to one, you'll go to another. You'll keep going. Unless by some chance of luck, you stumble and you are free from that. Now that reading Krishnamurti, reading a book is one thing, but talking to, being in the energy of that person is far different.
Yeah, good point. I was thinking that Krishnamurti and maybe UG Krishnamurti, Jiddu and UG, they don't say that you will keep searching past them. The point you've just made, I don't think they make that. They want you to give up the search or to keep it to yourself or something, you know. But you're saying, we will continue.
Yeah, I don't think Jay Krishnamurti wants people to give up the search. Very much the opposite. He's promoting the search.
Right, but he says go into it wisely. You realize you're not going to get anywhere that you could communicate. Yeah, where you think you're going is not where you're going to get,
Where you're looking now is not the place to look, he's saying. But where to look? Yeah, he's asking you where. Find out where to look. Okay, you could say, look within yourself. Well, you know, that's a cliche, you know.
Yeah.
What do you mean, look within yourself, you know? That's just another version of what these bozos have said, you know, that have all become authorities and so forth, you know, in our religious background structure. Yudi's the only one that says, get lost, buddy. But he knows they'll be back, you know. Or they'll go someplace else, you know. If they don't sit around and hang out with him, they'll find someone else that is more persuasive, more gives you what you think you want. And of course, what you think you want is not what you want at all. You have no idea what you want. if you're honest. So, what we're saying is that you will look somewhere, whether it's in psychotherapy or the new guru, the new this, the new that, you know, the new philosophy, the new political structure. You'll look somewhere because hope of being better tomorrow, getting what I want, what I think I want, feeling that I'm getting somewhere tomorrow to preserve this continuity of myself is what I'm interested in. That's what I'm interested in. I want to continue. I want to be permanent. Now, of course, you know, the Buddha 2,000 years ago said that was the problem. We're clinging to samsara, to the world, to the attachments. And we seek permanence. And it has to come to an end. But okay, there's no answer how it comes to an end. There's no formula. There's no technique. There's no system. Yeah, they've invented Vipassana this, or they've invented Zen therapy or Zen techniques, or they've invented this school, that school. But frankly, these schools fail. They don't produce another Buddha. They don't produce another Jesus, another Krishna, another Moses, or another J.K. or another Yuji. They don't do it because you can't use anything as a model, because you have to break the model. You have to break the image, the structure. Then something new might take place. So as long as you have the model, you're stuck in that concept, that construction. Only when you have the guts to reject all the models that exist is there a chance that you might be a little bit more free in your actions and your life.
Amen.
So that's my amen.
But let me challenge it by saying this, that you're citing traditional cultural figures of wisdom, the gurus, yep, the sages, the psychiatrists. Yep. What about the fact that people learn incredible amounts of stimulation, passing, rapid stimulation every day while they watch TV? They may not find it stimulating for 2 or 3 hours, but in the fourth hour, something comes on and sparks their thought structure in their mind. This searching, yeah, now is in the information environment. We don't have to use religious, cultural, or even museum or artistic context for the search, the enjoying of new experience. That's happening through media.
Look, Bob, the media, the message may change, but what's there underneath it is the same. I want to be forever me. I don't want to come to an end. Now, the description of that through media, through this, through that, through the latest revelation may alter. But the fundamental problem, the only problem I have, is me. I want to be me. Forever.
Okay.
I don't want
UG,
to come to an end.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Granted. But UG said, go make money. He was, I guess, made sure his accounts were balanced. So what about, let me say this, Bob, what if everybody tonight suddenly realized what you're talking about? They'd get up the next day and they'd continue acting the way they were doing it. We'd all be UGs, but we wouldn't be able to tell anybody, and we'd carry on doing our functions. Because the realization that it's all a model or a limitation doesn't stop human searching behavior daily life.
But Bob, that's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. Who's awake? You got to be awake.
No,
and you can say, you can surmise, what if this happened. Well, it's not going to happen.
Yeah, and I'd say it doesn't matter that it's not going to happen. I'm saying if you, the way Eugene lived his life, if we all got his insight, then we would carry on. We may not field questions like he did all day long, but we would do the basic instinctive things that he did as a human being, as an animal.
Yeah, let me say this. It's better to have money and be miserable than to be miserable without money.
And so you're in between. You're in between that. You got money, but you're in India, which is kind of, yeah. But you've got a comfortable way of surviving on it at your age, and yet you're in a crummy environment, sort of. If you had a lot of money, you could be where I am in Maui, and you might then you'd have be
are
miserable.
You willing to, are you willing? Are you willing to help me, sir? Come to Maui. Give me a room. Huh? Build a little house for me where I can live? Huh?
Would you do that? Would you do that?
I have work to do, sir.
you have searching to do, sir. Yeah. See, that's funny. You have work to do. You in other words, you like where you are.
I don't dislike it. I don't want to be someplace else other than where I am. You know, that's the problem. People want to be in two places at once, you know. First of all, they would rather be someplace else than where they are. They want something, you know, they want more of this, more of the money, more of the comfort, more of the love, more of the sensation, more of the food, more of, you know, whatever it is, more diamonds, more rubies, you know. More boyfriends, more girlfriends, you know.
That's the appetite.
I want more.
It's the natural appetite of the senses. Now, you're saying you're happy where you are. You don't dislike where you are. You don't desire to be anywhere else.
I don't think primarily I should be someplace else other than where I am, you know. If I do, then I'll move. I'll go. I'll leave. Obvious, right? So I must enjoy where I am.
Right. And your question about why you're there is irrelevant. It's not what you instinctively feel. You know, you feel you're in the right place. You don't know why, but the whyness is irrelevant.
Right.
The thought about it is irrelevant.
But human beings basically want to be someplace other than where they are. It's the same way. If they have $1 million, I had a friend, he got about $1 million, he got a couple $1 million in a business transaction. He immediately wanted more money, more millions.
This is Douglas.
He tried to figure out how to get more money.
This is Douglas.
Huh? Yeah.
Douglas.
Yeah, and I have other friends that have they're well enough off, and they want more. Or they're not willing to share what they have with others. I know someone who's got millions of dollars. And will that person share any of that? No. Well, they'll keep it for a rainy day.
That is the reason. It's security for disaster in the future. You think that's the main reason they won't share any of it?
Of course. I may need it. Can't possibly spend it. Yeah.
Right. So I like the way McLuhan said our senses are raw appetite. And it's always translating into other senses or into other matter, consuming in different forms. That is the fact of us. And you could say that we're animals. We're animals, you know. Yeah. That's a way of saying it.
Yeah, but we're nothing other than animals. I mean, there isn't anything other than an animal. That's what it is.
But human beings
think they're not animals. They think they're some being, some spiritual entity. Some imbued with spiritual, you know, faculties and so forth. They are just, you know, an animal. That's all.
Yeah, but they may, they may be a different animal in the sense they got doubleness. They are aware of themselves in this situation.
Well, they have the tragedy of this sorrow of being separate from the rest of the world or nature. The other animals aren't separate. They don't feel so, the separateness.
All right, so I know you wouldn't adopt any philosophical religious model, but it's close to the truth when the Bible says, or some parts of the Bible, say that we're in a fallen condition here, a tragic condition.
That seems to be a fundamental truth there, a recognition that human beings are dysfunctional, you know? Human beings have a negative side to them. This kind of question I looked at and thought about a great deal. It's the Adam and Eve story. Eve tempts Adam and he eats the apple and they tasted knowledge. They fall from the garden of they fall from paradise through knowledge. Yeah, that is an archetype of the condition of human beings.
Yeah, it's a
language.
Fact.
Language, knowledge, developed this separation. So, Yuji said somewhere the genetic structure took it the wrong turn. Now I question. I don't know. For me, I don't know that. Yeah, he says.
That's the doubleness, because it's obviously humans are remarkable, pleasant things to be around a good chunk of the time.
Oh.
You know, not always.
Go to the moon. We've gone to the moon or Mars and exploring our part of the universe here. We're incredible.
Well, not even that. Just the way humans enjoy and laugh with each other.
Well, everything. Yeah, we have a good time.
We have a good... It's 50-50. We have 50% good time and...
Let me say this.
It's 50-50. We have 50% good time and 50% bad time. It's a dead heat. Yeah. You know what I mean? It cancels out. And we're aware.
The thing is, we want to be happy all the time, you see? And it's just not possible.
Okay, when you're having a meal and you really love the food... It's a micro version of consciousness trying to never stop. You want the sensation, the pleasant sensation in that little period at the dinner table to keep eating, to keep experiencing. So there's your pulsation, the cosmic pulsation of in and out, completion and more. That happens in your senses every minute.
All the time. Whether it's eating or sex or some other form of pleasure, you want to continue it endlessly. Yeah. Gee, I want to have that chicken kebab or something that I had the other night. Yep, so tasty, you know.
Yeah.
Or I wanted this or I wanted that. Or I want to experience the first time that I ever experienced, you know, a raw, natural experience, you know. We call it. You know.
That's the micro version of the spirit of when the universe was created, an amazing beginning point, and all of consciousness experienced it, and then they kind of try to retrieve it. That's the big level. You're expressing it in the micro level, the same archetype. It's all one moment. Yeah. It was one moment.
Yeah.
Okay.
But
we
in the meantime, what are we doing? What are we doing?
You're an idiot to bring up that question. You're just repeating the concern of flaky funt, the worry warts. What are we doing about it?
Right. That's the horrors. Yeah. That's what I'm left with.
When you're living with someone, a friend of mine said that he is so happy. He's born in 1965. He's 43. He's so happy. No, he's born in 64. He's 44. He's so happy he's alone because he encounters people day in and day out at work and recreation, that are all bugged by someone that they're involved with. They live with, or they have
relationships. Right.
And he said, I realized that everybody is driven mad by some other person, and that I've got it made by being by myself. that was his latest realization.
I have some friends who are sort of similar. They think that they're alone, and they, you know, they go and come as they please and so forth, and they haven't got a girlfriend or a boyfriend or this or that. And they got money, and, you know, they got a car, and they can do what they want. They can travel first class on an airplane if they want to, you know. But I find that they're not, you know, they're not a happy person all the time. I find that they're searching, they want something, they're looking for the answer, yeah? They're not content.
But that's the universal thing. You seem to be focusing, emphasizing that. These people are happy 80% of their life, or...
No, not even 80.
Okay, 60%. They tip a little bit more, they're a little more happiness than sadness, okay?
Oh, it's relevant. It's relative with the situation, so.
Okay, but then you look at them and look at the archetypal blanketing idea that we're all lost and we're searching. You project that into everybody occasionally when you're thinking about it or talking about it with someone like me or something. You know, I don't think you say this to your partner.
No, all the time. Everybody.
Do you say this to your partner all the time?
In different ways, yeah.
Does your partner find it interesting?
I question everything. Whatever someone says, I question. Huh? Really? Is that what you're doing?
We're going down to the elevator? Oh, really? Yeah. We're going to get the elevator out of the building?
Now, even the rickshaw driver in front of me, you know, if he turned around and said, what do I think about this, I'd tell him, you know. But luckily, we don't speak the same language. I don't speak Hindi.
But see, we're not talking. I'm not getting to Bob Carr. Bob Carr is a dead entity looking out, the same thing that's looking out of me. But within language, Bob Carr is repeating the thought archive just a little more persistently. The question, stupid question that thought creates is, what are we doing here? Really? Why are we here? You know, that's a thought archetype.
I don't really think of that very much. What, if you ask me what is it I think of, is that I just want to be, you know, left alone. I just want to be content, happy, you know, just left just to myself, more or less. But I realize I can't. It's not possible. We're social creatures, and I can't live without, you know, interacting with other people. The only person I know that could do this was the only person I knew that could do this was Yuji, but he consistently had guests all around him all the time. There were people around him all the time, but he wasn't, you know, dependent on any one person. He didn't care.
I was a little dependent on Valentine. He was a little dependent on Valentine, it seemed.
Yeah, that was before the purge.
You mean she was just hanging on? He let her hang on after the event of 1967.
Yeah.
Okay, so he didn't need her. He didn't need people, but he was stuck with people. There's the doubleness I was telling you. You just said, I don't want to... No, let me say this.
Yeah.
Okay, no, you said that you have a part of yourself that doesn't mind being alone, as long as everything's cool. But you say that's impossible. There's the doubleness, the paradox, the contradiction right there.
Yuji once said, he went away, he went way up in the mountains, up in some place like Shimla, way up in the Himalayas someplace. And he said, if you want to just get away from people, you know, be by himself. And you see, he wasn't there more than 20 minutes in his room, and there was a knock on the door.
Well, he said, someone found him.
Someone knew about it. tried talking to him.
How did he get there? Did he drive? Did someone drive him?
No. He took a train or a plane or something. The other thing is, we got about 10 minutes left here, but I noticed one time, usually one time, he was going to Vancouver, British Columbia to see some people. And when he got to the airport in Vancouver, there was some problem with communicating with these people. And so he thought he'd stay in a pension for a night, or a hotel. So he looked up a pension that was near the airport, and he went there, and they told him that it was closed, that they weren't open, the season was off. But they said, but you can stay here anyway, they said. We'll let you stay here. He stayed there 4 or 5 days with these people, and during the course of that time, he became very friendly with them, and they opened up their hearts and told him of all, they were Christians, and they spoke to him in a Christian, you know, struck way, manner. And so the same thing that people want, they were also asking him. They recognized, they said, well, you're just like Jesus, they said, you know, you're just like that or this. They didn't want him to leave at the end. They didn't want to charge you for the room. So he realized that he has no choice in the matter.
Yeah, that's what he is. He has that charismatic effect. And he would not say why. He would not say why it was that way. He couldn't explain it. It just was, and he lived with it.
If you've got it, it expresses itself. You know, hey, Madonna's got something, right?
Yeah.
Tremendous energy to express what Madonna wants to create, this image. But of course, the sad part about it, she won't be able to do this forever. Like Michael Jackson, not even plastic surgery are you going to keep this thing going forever. You know. Or Julia Roberts, throw in the towel, you know.
Yeah, you someday, think she's over?
It's over.
Is Julia? Yeah, someday. But yeah, Yuji had something. But Yuji had something that would not die.
Oh, would never die. No.
And that would be a better charisma than the transitory ones that the world offered.
Yeah. So if you got it, you got something that expresses itself in all kinds of different ways. I can go sit on a park bench in another part of the city. And I'll bet you any amount of money that within a short time I'll meet somebody and they are going to start talking to me about themselves. It happens.
Yeah, we're similar that way.
Yeah.
It will come out.
Yeah. It will come out. Yeah. Like attracts like, you know. The vibration attracts. I asked Yuji, how come I got attracted to you? And he said, because this what I am is what you want. You're attracted to it. You're attracted to this.
Yeah, that would be something universal that you're attracted to, because if you can attract people on the park bench, then they're seeing something in you.
Yeah.
It's an aura that allows them to feel.
Yeah.
You're such a loser. You look like such a loser that a person says, I can talk to this person. It's not going to affect my life. This person has no social status.
No, I don't think they think that. They say it is more of a mystery. You know, what am I doing in India? Who am I? Where am I come from? What do I think? What are my qualifications? You know, by the way, I have a problem, yeah? What's your problem? Well...
Okay,
well,
so it's partly.
I think we'll. I gotta.
We can end soon. Let me just say this. Yeah, we'll end in a second, but I just want to say so it's partly your Americanness. You're different from the normal surroundings that stands out.
It happens in America.
It happens to you there, yeah. Okay, well.
Let me interrupt one question.
Yeah,
Robert, was Yuji happy?
Happy?
Well, happy sounds like a trite term, doesn't it? But was he suffering, or was he at peace, or what?
No, not suffering. Not suffering.
Not suffering.
Joyful.
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 Wow, and that seemed continuous in your experience.
Like a fresh flower, like a fresh flower.
Yeah, and in your experience, that was uninterrupted?
Uninterrupted. Okay. Never changed.
Thank you.
Okay. Okay, Bob, we'll talk next Sunday. You're Monday morning.
All right, give me a mail to remind me then, okay?
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Okay. Monday.
See you on the park. Right. We'll see you on the park bench
bye.
Next week.
I'll see you on the park bench.
Okay, bye.